We're joined now by Megan Voss, who is a teaching faculty member at the Center for Spirituality and Healing at the University of Minnesota. She's going to be talking about some of the psychological and mental impacts of the COVID-19 outbreak in Minnesota and around the country and the world. Megan, appreciate the time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Brett.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start off with this. What sorts of psychological impacts could people experience, especially as they deal with social distancing? Because I go back and look at like what happened with SARS in 2003 in parts of Asia where people experienced PTSD. What are you thinking could happen here in our country?
Well, I think a lot is still to be figured out. We have a lot of unknowns at this point. The average person who is staying at home and spending more time in isolation, of course, is at risk for things like anxiety, depressed mood, feelings of restlessness, wanting to sleep too much or not being able to sleep enough, and just that feeling of isolation and loneliness.
So what sorts of signs could we look for in someone, whether it's yourself or maybe you have a loved one at home, that they could be experiencing some distressed mental health or maybe even some trauma? What are some signs we should be looking for?
Yeah, well, you know, everyone has a different baseline, and I think an important part of moving forward and taking care of yourself during this is really taking the time to learn how to listen to your own body and recognizing those signs in yourself, because everyone has different signs and symptoms. You know, commonly people become irritable, as I mentioned. People can want to sleep more than usual or have difficulty sleeping at all because of the extra kind of adrenaline that's surging through your body in a time of stress. And then along with that can come changes in appetite. Some people may turn to using alcohol as a coping mechanism or prescription or non-prescription drugs. So those are some of the, you know, kind of signs and symptoms that you might start seeing in a family member or a loved one at home. And then, of course, when we think about our healthcare workforce and the people that are on the front lines, they may have many other different signs and symptoms dealing with trauma and things like going into the realm then of PTSD, grief, and loss. One common kind of coping mechanism that we all use as humans is to start to avoid. You know, avoidance can be a real sign that someone is struggling, or leaning in too much, being obsessed with everything that's coming out in the news, reading everything possible on COVID-19, working all the time, you know, kind of anytime an individual gets out of balance and goes from, you know, to one extreme or the other is a time when we should really tune in and listen and take that as a sign to see what's going on and take a deeper dive.
So do you think people should maybe take a break sometimes from reading about COVID-19? Because it is very easy to sit there and read about all those updates. But as you said, it can really have a big impact on your mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's a couple of things we can think about doing to help manage that kind of 24/7 news trap. First of all, I recommend that people try and only read reputable resources. You know, don't spend your time scrolling aimlessly through social media and reading everything that pops up. Even if you know it's fake, sometimes it's easy to get sucked in and to read it just to see, you know, well, what is this person thinking? Why are they, who would write this? You know, it's really easy to get sucked into that story. So sticking to the reputable resources is one way to kind of limit yourself, stick to the CDC, the World Health Organization, or some of our local experts. We have great experts at the University of Minnesota right here at Mayo Clinic. There's a lot coming out from those organizations that can be certainly trusted. And I think even just limiting the amount of time in a day that you spend consuming information related to COVID-19, you know, generally we say for your own well-being that it's good to take a media fast maybe once a week, one day a week. And as we started to talk to it and talk about it in relation to this crisis, I've said, I don't know if people can even take an entire day break because things are evolving so quickly that it can be kind of anxiety producing to think about staying away from the news for an entire day. So even just taking breaks during the day, you know, maybe check in a reputable resource in the morning and check in at the end of the day, or tune in when you know there's going to be something that could be really important to your daily life, like the governor giving a press release. But then checking out, you know, for several hours during the middle of the day, it's also a good practice to limit what we take in first thing in the morning and last thing before bed, because that really sets the tone for the day, and then also sets the tone for going into our sleep routine and calming the brain and being able to turn down those anxieties and really go into a sleep mode. And again, every individual is going to be different. So I think you should, the key is to really just listen to your own body and your own mind and notice when you're feeling anxiety. And if reading the news before bed keeps you awake at night, then that would be a key that you wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, I've certainly been guilty of that on more than one occasion since COVID-19 has broken out, because, as you said, it might not be possible to take like a one-day break from the news cycle, but as you're talking about, even just taking a few hours from not looking at the news can definitely help, because if you are sitting there and constantly consuming what's happening in the news cycle with the coronavirus, yeah, it's certainly not good for you mentally, and it can lead to a lot of anxiety in your life. So let's talk about that aspect with anxiety. For people who are scared that maybe they will contract the coronavirus or maybe someone they know will get it, how should people deal with some of the anxiety they get from what's going on right now?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. And we know that anxiety and fear are very closely linked and often difficult to separate what is anxiety and what is fear. And so the first thing I recommend is to normalize that anxiety or that fear, however you're naming it. Because we all have a really real reason to have some fear right now. And a little bit of fear is healthy, right? That's what we want, because that keeps people home and taking this seriously. If no one was having any fear at all, then where would we be? So I think just normalizing it and appreciating that fear is actually doing something good for society and can keep people healthy right now is a good thing. You know, instead of thinking of fear and anxiety as always the enemy, it's okay to lean into that a little bit and to really kind of analyze it from a very logical standpoint, to say, okay, this is real. This is something to be afraid of and something to manage. And then some people find it helpful to think, like, what is worst case scenario? Just get that out of the way and then dial back to, okay, now what is really happening right here in my circle that I can control? And so other people just don't need to go to that worst case scenario place and can just be really methodical and logical from the get-go. And either way is fine. The point is just to kind of lean in, work with your thoughts, don't avoid them, and then make a logical plan. If it helps, you can sort things into categories of things you can control and things you cannot control, and then start to work on that list of things you can control. And if that list is overwhelming, then you may even want to dwindle that list down even further to what is urgent that I control, what is really important to me, and what is not so urgent and not so important, or what can be delegated. So if it's, you know, very tangible items like getting supplies at the store, maybe that could be delegated. Or, you know, if going out to get supplies is something that's very fear-inducing for one member of a household, then maybe that job gets delegated to another person. And wiping down surfaces and preparing the house can be a task for another member of the family. So it's just really important to kind of lean in, normalize that fear and anxiety, and then take it step by step.
Yeah, I think you bring up a key point there, because you don't want to completely ignore your fear and try to squash that, because that's certainly not going to have a good outcome as well, correct?
Right. We would be in a bigger issue if everyone said there's nothing to be afraid of at all.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about a couple of groups of people that that I'm kind of concerned about. And let's talk about the first one here. Let's say you have young children at home that maybe aren't comprehending quite what the coronavirus is, either because of their age or for whatever their reasons. How should people talk to their kids about what's going on right now?
Yeah, well, it's number one, it's really important to always be honest with kids. Kids are intelligent, they're intuitive. They pick up not only on what's being said around them, but also on the nonverbals and kind of just the energy of the household and society. Mm-hmm. So there's no point in hiding any of it from them. But things need to be broken down for them and explained to them in age-appropriate ways. And so there are, you know, resources out there on the web and through schools that you can use to kind of guide that conversation. But in general, you know your own child and you know what level of understanding they have and how you normally have conversations. But it's important to not only explain to them what's going on in terms that they can understand, but give them an opportunity to ask questions. Well, one technique that I'm a really big fan of is even just having a little talk time at the end of the day so that kids can get anything off their mind. If they've heard something throughout the day, maybe they caught a tidbit on the news or heard you say something on the phone, and they're just really holding on to that as an anxiety because they don't exactly know what it means. It's good to just give them time at the end of the day to kind of say, you know, I heard this thing earlier. I'm really worried about it. What does it mean? Because then you can clear up anything that they may have heard and be if they're holding on to an unnecessary fear. And then let them in on the family plan. So whatever steps you're taking to keep your family safe during this time, let them in on that and give them a part of that. So, you know, whether the job be for them to wash their hands every time before a meal or, you know, help keep certain parts of the house clean. Maybe they wipe down their own doorknobs and light switches on a regular basis. Kind of make them part of the plan so that they feel some ownership and some control over the situation.
So on the other side of the age spectrum, what about if you have parents or grandparents that are currently in senior facilities that are completely locked down, what advice would you have for them or even the relatives of them to make sure that those seniors in those facilities aren't being completely isolated?
Yeah, that's a really tough one.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a good answer. Yeah.
We're all leaning really heavily on technology right now. And, of course, that's an age group where their tech savviness can vary greatly. You know, plenty of grandparents and great-grandparents these days know how to FaceTime and can use kind of video conferencing technology, and others cannot, and some may not even be able to really participate in a phone call to the degree that you wish they could. So I think, you know, relying on the staff in these facilities, there's wonderful staff. No one goes into long-term care without having a big heart for that type of work. And so talking to the staff to ask what steps they're taking to help residents feel safe and understood, and then seeing if there's a way that staff or even volunteers can help connect. I recently heard of someone in my neighborhood arranging a program so that random people could volunteer to video conference with seniors, and the facility was setting up the video conferencing. So the seniors didn't need to have any tech savviness at all, but they could just show up at a time and the iPad would be set up and there'd be someone on the other end for them to speak with. So I think it's just important to communicate with facilities and see what's available where your loved one might be. And there again, I would give the same advice to be honest and try to find ways in which you can give your senior citizen family member some control over the situation, because the worst thing you can do for someone who's having anxiety or fearfulness is to take the last sense of control away from them and tell them exactly what they're going to do and how the situation is going to be handled. Look for simple, small ways in which you can give some of the control back to that individual, and it will make a big difference.
Megan, got time for just a few more questions, and this is another really tough question that I'm not quite sure if there's a good answer to it, but let's say you or maybe a loved one in your family does end up getting infected with the coronavirus. What steps should you take to try to maintain good mental health? Because I would imagine if you personally or anyone you know gets the coronavirus, there's going to be a lot of anxiety that goes through your head when you look at some of the stats that there's a mortality rate of around 3%, around 15% of people end up in the hospital. What can you do to make sure you still remain in a good place mentally if maybe you do end up contracting the coronavirus?
Yeah, well, as best you can, identify your support systems, ideally before it would even get to that point. You know, hopefully at this point in the social distancing movement, we all have someone that we're checking in on every day, and all of us are being checked in on by someone else every day. You know, that's a good starting point, so that you have your support system in place before ever contracting the virus. And then I would give the same advice I gave earlier about leaning into fear and anxiety and trying to sort out what's realistic and what's not, and listening to sound medical reasoning and the science behind things. And although the science can sometimes be scary, it's better to have the facts and go with the facts, because often our brains want to catastrophize and go to the worst place or the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. And sometimes just a little bit of information, we could realize that, you know, outcomes maybe not aren't as bad as we fear that they are. And then I guess I would just leave listeners with this little bit of hope that one thing that you can control is your thoughts and, to a degree, your stress response. And we know that stress is a big immunosuppressant in and of itself. When we feel stress, either physical stress or mental, emotional stress, our body has a cascade of hormones that literally suppress our immune system. And so to whatever degree you can manage your stress through whatever mechanisms have worked for you your whole life, keep doing those things, because the more you can take care of yourself mentally and emotionally, the stronger you will be physically, the stronger your immune system will be. So, you know, do as best you can to get the amount of sleep that you know your body needs. Get a little bit of physical exercise every day. You know, social distancing doesn't mean that you can't go outdoors and get some sunshine and some fresh air and walk around. That all boosts your mood and your immune system. And put healthy foods into your body as much as possible. It's a little difficult with limiting trips to the store, and some people are dependent on others to bring them groceries right now, but do the best that you can to put some healthy foods into your body, because all of that will strengthen your immune system. And in this kind of scary time, sometimes that's about the only thing we can control, is how we prepare our own bodies.
We've been speaking with Megan Voss. She is a teaching faculty member at the Center for Spirituality and in Healing over at the University of Minnesota, giving us some good advice on how psychologically and mentally we can try to cope with what's happening with social distancing and the COVID-19 pandemic. Megan, really appreciate your time today and giving us some good information.
Yeah, thanks for having me.